Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Welcome to Marvel Vision, a podcast about Marvel, the MCU, and right now the finale of Daredevil Born Again. Oh. I have, in fact, been born again 9 times over. I'm Alex.
I've been murdered in a brutal fashion. Guess who I am? I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about episode 9 of Daredevil Born Again, Straight to Hell, the season 1 finale. So if you haven't seen it on Disney Plus, go check it out because we're going to spoil it. But it all
this,
comes
wait, this
down-
is the finale? Are you sure? Because it doesn't seem like a finale.
You're right.
Daredevil
so
did very little. Surely there's another episode.
Hold on. All right.
There
calm
must
down.
Be.
Calm down with
is
the
there
critical
another season?
Takes. We're just on the recaps. Hold on. Yes. I'll answer Pete's question. Yes, there is another season.
Woo.
Season 2 went into production starting on February 28th before season 1 even premiered. It's going to be another 8 episodes. And at least, according to the showrunner, it's going to premiere in March of 2026 around the
just
same time.
Just got to stay alive till then.
Alive till
that's really nice.
25 and then 26.
Oh. Good. And I think then the showrunners say that in the next season, it's going to be Karen and Daredevil going places and not doing stuff, just like casually edging on a fight.
I mean, I'm sorry, that's sir. Relatable content going around and being like, I don't know, should we go here? I'm not sure.
So, that choosing brunch. They're fighting the Punisher army.
Yeah, it's a vigilante brunch. What am I even saying here? Okay, so brief bit of recap. After getting shot in the previous episode, we flash back in time. We find out how Bullseye broke out of prison, working with Vanessa Fisk. And Matt wakes up. Lots of stuff goes down from there as Kingpin pulls the power out on the city, makes a power grab to create martial law using the anti-vigilante task force. We've got a little bit of Sheila seeming to step up, working with the commissioner of police. Unfortunately, she gets too scared and backs down, leading to the horrific death of the commissioner of police at the hands of Kingpin. The anti-vigilante task force all dress up as the Punisher. Luckily, the Punisher is back to team up with Daredevil. We find out that Cole North was behind the killing of White Tiger. They blow him up and then team up with Karen Page to try to take down the Kingpin. It doesn't quite work. Instead, the Punisher gets captured by the Kingpin, thrown in a cage back in Red Hook, again, the most dangerous district in New York, along with Tony Dalton, the swordsman, again, like really showing those acting chops he showed us on Better Call Saul here by sitting in a cage.
How dare you?
I believed he was in that cage. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. And then at the end, Daredevil goes to attack Red Hook. The whole plan was that Red Hook is essentially international waters. No laws apply. So the Fists have created their own city state there with the anti-vigilante task force as their private army. They have, again, declared martial law on New York because of these new vigilante laws. So Kingpin is reigning supreme. The Empire has struck back, if you will. And meanwhile, Daredevil and Karen Page, Daredevil's about to attack. Karen's like, you're one dude. You're not going to be able to do this. And he's like, let's gather the army. They go back to Josie Pubs. And, oh, you know who's there, who's going to get ready to bring the pain. You've got
Cherry.
BB Eric, maybe. Josie is there. She's got those olives, and those are pretty gross.
Yeah.
So,
he knows how to.
Here
pour
we come.
Drink.
The heroes are finally all together. Everybody who expected to be in that bar was definitely in that bar at the end. And it was the last little bit. We get a mid-credit scene with Punisher breaking an arm and break it out, as he is wont to do, probably to leave the state because it's too dangerous. We know the Punisher.
Yeah.
He's a little scaredy cat. So
how dare you, sir? How dare you?
And what is he now? What is he now? Nightgown man? Huh?
We got Nightgown man. That was hilarious. That was hilarious.
That was not hilarious.
That was hilarious.
That was
hilarious.
That was not hilarious.
That was hilarious.
Is Punisher doing a tight five?
Which that was like, fantastic.
Is he going on Fallon?
There's no coffee. What are you, Nightgown Man? This is
I think next season we'll find Punisher at the Comedy Cellar doing, you know, two drink minimum.
Observational comedy. He's the killer.
The he's the new
the
Seinfeld.
Next Seinfeld.
He's, well, I would say he's, wow, very weird. He's like the Andrew Dice Clay who kills people, which I think Andrew Dice Clay did a little bit.
Well, he killed in at stand-up shows. He destroyed.
Yeah. Ever watch any of that Dice stuff?
I'm going to shoot you in the cock. That's the Punisher, by the way.
Yep.
Yeah, yes, no, that's I got good. That.
Thank you very
much. All right, let's take it back to the Marvel flip.
Frank really Dice Castle.
Why are we talking? We've finally gotten away from this. We've had several episodes not talking about the Marvel flip.
It's so glorious, though.
There was nothing new. There was nothing new.
You see those page flips and you think anything's possible. It's like a warm hug before the show starts. It's a great idea.
Do you like that? Like when you go see a Broadway show, does somebody come out and give you a warm hug before the show starts?
It would be nice.
A stranger hugging you before the show?
No, like an usher. You know, someone who works.
Have you seen
trust.
How much Broadway costs these days? I mean, come on. They should give you several
one hug.
Maybe a little peck on the lips.
Just a shoulder hug.
Pete, you said it's not a stranger, it's an usher. Do you know
someone you
the
trust. Someone you trust, you know, like an usher.
What an authority figure in your life.
Yeah.
Usher.
He's in charge of the seating. He's in charge of all
gender much?
Oh, okay, my bad. You're right. You're right, bad.
Well, in fact, most ushers are like 65-year-old women. So,
yeah, I agree with Pete. Though you're making a tacit agreement with your usher when they hand you that program, where you're ride or die for them. Past
exactly,
that
you guys are in a agreement.
Mm-hmm. And getting back to the Marvel flip, I enjoyed it especially because after the episode, I rewatched the flip because it had more action than the last 10 minutes.
Wow.
How dare you?
Okay, so I knew this was coming.
How dare you?
Let's talk general feelings about this as well as the season as a whole before we get into specifics for the episode. Justin, this has been bubbling beneath the surface on our Discord and other places. You seem very unhappy with this. How are you feeling?
It's not that I'm unhappy because it's just the intention of this was not what I expected. Like, this was such a deep dive into, like, Empire Strikes Back, the villains are winning. And I feel like the season did a great job of setting up, like, someone has to punch that fucking cop in the face, the hand fryer dude. And I was Powell. Yeah, I was like, we're going to get that in the finale. And then we got nothing. And the fact that they went so far.
He died horribly in a giant explosion.
No. Cole North died. Powell. Cole North. Powell was the guy who was confronting the Punisher of that scene. And he's like, come join us. Come to the dark side.
Yeah, right.
Punisher's like, no.
I was hoping for more of a discussion in that scene, by the way.
Discussion.
I thought the Punisher would be like, what are you guys doing? Look at you.
I agree with you there too. Like this show was like, it was sort of just a harsher, it was like, you know, banging a hammer on a piece of cold metal. And I expected just a little bit more juice behind it rather than such a naked, like, come back next week and we're definitely going to do the thing that you want.
Well, can we agree on one thing, that slow motion Punisher dive was just a work of art?
There's a lot of great stuff.
One shot, like, that was beautiful. You can, come on.
Well, to take an opposite tack, because I really like this. I hear what you're saying in terms of expectations, but what I thought they did really nicely this season that we've talked about almost every episode is focus very squarely on Matt Murdock and Wilson Fisk and their two paths at the beginning, them being like, well, I'm not Daredevil anymore. Well, I'm not the Kingpin anymore. See you later. We're at the diner. And us knowing that it's only a matter of time before they become these things. Halfway through the season, we got put back on the Daredevil mask, but there's still like a little bit of a reticence there to be Daredevil. He's still sort of holding on to that Matt Murdock of it all. And same thing with Wilson Fisk. As we find out here, there's some line that Vanessa says to Dex a year earlier before he kills Foggy, where he's like, is he part of this? And she's like, he's always part of this. So we know he's always been the Kingpin. Matt has always been Daredevil in the background. But in terms of just us like watching the show, they haven't publicly been that. And just to bring this back around, I thought there was a really nice arc from that first episode to this last episode where Daredevil, he's like, all right, put on the mask, go into Josie. I am Daredevil. That's who I am. And Wilson Fisk clinking glasses with his wife, he's like, I'm the kingpin. That's who I am. So going into season two, whatever that arc is, whatever we'll see, maybe it just ends up being the second half of a season. And I, you know, we'll talk to that when it comes to that. But I thought that arced out very nicely.
Well, here's the thing. I agree with you up until this final episode where I think the kingpin did become the kingpin again. Daredevil did not become Daredevil because Daredevil would have gone into that. He would have gone into that Red Hook factory.
No, he couldn't have. He was barely limping there. And Karen was like, yo, bro, you can't take on a whole army in this.
Daredevil would have. He's a hero.
He should. He would have got killed. He would have been another cage next to Frank.
The show is written by humans. They could have written him to not die.
It was an impossible task. And Carol was like, yo, not right now, bro.
To Pete's point, to back Pete up here, I think they already very ably showed that with Punisher, who went and murdered a ton of cops. Its own discussion.
A lot of grunting, too.
Classic John
Bernthal.
Get at it.
Very grunty.
But they already showed that it is an impenetrable fortress. So Daredevil going in there, like Karen said, I think they very ably showed it would have been a suicide mission.
Exactly.
The end goal here is that Daredevil started the season throwing Bullseye off a roof and being like, I can't do this anymore. I can't be a hero. And the end is he accepts, I am a hero. I'm going to inspire these people with a speech at the end that I thought was great and like legitimately gave me chills at the end of the episode.
Yeah, the
versus
rebel
Kingpin, who again is like, yep, I'm a villain. Who cares about this mayor stuff? I've got what I wanted. Now I can do this out in the open.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. Like, a lot of that stuff is cool, but this was not a closed season of television. And I think that's where I'm bumped by, like, them doing all it. Like, Kingpin got to complete his arc to take his power and be in charge. Daredevil got close to completing his arc and then was like, okay, and then I swear we're going to fight him. And I wanted something that showed a completion, and it just fully did not. It fully pivoted to, like, a more cynical TV moment, I feel like. Even though it was inspiring and bringing the team together, I was like, give me something that completes an idea from this season, which I don't think they did. Him becoming Daredevil, he did that, and he fought at the beginning, and it was treated very casually. Him and the Punisher are like buds, even though the Punisher's killing these dudes in front of him. He's like, bro, don't.
I would also say, not to keep arguing with you, Justin, but I think that's the issue with the Punisher across the board. We talk about that all the time in comics. All apologies to Pete, who's going to get very mad at me for saying these things. But the issue with the Punisher in this superhero world is he murders people. And he works as like a counterpoint to Spider-Man when he's first introduced. He works as a counterpoint to Daredevil with the you're one bad day away from being me speech. Punisher being like in the center of the action. John Bernthal, awesome. He's great to watch. Seeing the two of them work off each other, great. But that exact moment you're talking about where he's like, don't kill people, and then he's like, bang, 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 is just, it takes you out.
He doesn't work as a sustained protagonist, I think, to your point, like, because it's Well, but I just mean I think in his own series, yes, and that's about a different thing. But this Daredevil show, which is about him, like, finding his moral compass, Punisher literally undercuts that message. Like, the season was about him being like, I should stay on the right side of the law and do this way, but I can't because I'm Daredevil. But then the Punisher's like, I do what I want, I kill everybody, and we're friends, and now I'm the guy on the inside.
That's not what it's saying.
Karen Page,
it's showing how broken the Punisher is. It's not like he's the shiny, I'm living my best life. He's living in this fucking basement and having a really hard time.
He got out of the basement. He got a great haircut, shaved his beard.
Yeah, for Karen.
He's ready to go, man.
For Karen.
But I will say from a moral and like a character movement point of view, Pete, he's not questioning anything. He's like, he's unhappy, but he's in battle. He's in war. He's like, I'm in underground for now until I have to go kill more people.
I think, you know, this is hard because it's an end of a season, and I understand a little bit of what you're saying. But I think that, like, the show is also talking about how crazy life is, how shitty life is, how ups and downs happen that you have no control over, and you're trying to do the best that you can. And I think having the Punisher being this kind of like, I don't want to be this guy, and I'm trying not to be, you know, other things in between, and showing how muddy and insane it gets a little bit, you know, and he's struggling with this black and white that I think is not kind of fitting on all situations. And it's messy. And the ending, I understand what you're saying. Like, I want more of an arc, and I feel like we'll get it in the next season, but you can only do so much with 9 episodes. You know what I mean?
They had plenty of time. They did like a 10-minute montage of like, here's all the people we met this week. And it's like, okay, well, I know them.
You didn't think that was nice?
It's nice. It was just, it frustrated me as a
Manny
as
my Kingpin in his chair being like, soon it will all be mine.
But one other thing I could throw out there that I think they arced very well in the season, as I continue to give it big ups, is the path of Foggy, like, and having Foggy's death have resonance and repercussions. What?
He's hyping it.
Stop. I'm saying this is good. Like, they didn't just kill him for shock value at the beginning, like we talked about with the revelations last week, that really tied into the plot. And particularly in this last episode, I thought they brought it home very nicely, being like, Foggy was going to stop this whole thing. Like, Foggy was actually key to this, and him dying caused this whole domino falling of events that led us to this point. We are here, and it's only through his case files that we're actually going to figure out what Kingpin is up to and hopefully figure out a way to stop him.
I agree. That was well done and subtly done. And I think it sets Foggy up, like, we're going to get him in flashback next season, I think, putting his case together. I bet we're going to see him through Matt looking through the case files and sorting that out. And that's a cool idea. But last thing about the way this episode arced and the season arced, this final episode centered Kingpin and Punisher as the protagonists and the people that we're backing. And it's put Daredevil as the Foggy, as the person who's like, okay, guys, let's just really be careful here and figure it out. And I was like, that's not a superhero show. This was a supervillain show.
I hear what you're saying in terms of the screen time that is given to folks. Like,
I would not even just the screen time, the moral center, the like power and the like enjoyment of the show was watching the Kingpin fucking kill people and the Punisher kill people, where our hero is being like,
want a nice little head squeeze every once in a while. You know what I mean?
I can't believe they showed that. And it was horrifying, and it was meant to horrify us.
Yeah.
But I was like, Disney Plus airs this?
It is crazy. I mean, not to get all like old and parody, but I've been rewatching the Star Wars movies with my son. So I've been going into Disney Plus more often and clicking in there. And it's like, hey, here's a fucking Xenomorph, you guys, right at the head of Disney Plus, or Daredevil Born Again, or all of these other adult things. It's a little weird.
They were just so picky about it for the first, you know, 6 years or whatever of the streaming service. It just goes to show the squeezing money. It makes you be like, yeah, let's get that head in front of anybody's eyeballs who will watch it.
Yeah, that was the most violent thing that's ever happened to the MCU. We were talking about a little bit on Discord versus the previous seasons of Daredevil, which did get very violent. But like, I think it was one of our awesome supporters, Derek Maynard, brought up the car door slam for the first season of Daredevil, which is excruciating to watch. If you don't remember,
Kingpin
taking an underling and just smashing his head over and over into the car door. It's awful, but if you go back and watch it, you mostly don't see the actual act. It's mostly sound effects and like a little blood splurting and squelching. And when the guy eventually falls down with basically no head, it's filmed from far away, mostly in shadow. This was like scanners or something, just snapping his jaw and the top of his head off. Oh my God. I mean, great. I loved it, but awful.
Yeah. Yeah, it was intense. And like, again, like that was like a big scene. And then the post-credit scene was a Punisher moment where he just like brutally breaks a dude's arm, and then it looked like he was going to tear it off and turn it into like a key to break out of his cell and then stab other people with it. I was like, what the fuck is the plan? Exactly. Where my imagination went, and I'm like, why am I, the credits are rolling, I'm like, what is he going to do with that broken arm blood bag? And I'm like, this is what I'm left with to go out into the world.
I mean, I think part of it, this is pure speculation on my part, but I think part of it was the amount of time they could get John Bernthal. And John Bernthal has talked about this pretty publicly. Initially, he didn't want to come back as Punisher for the original version of Daredevil Born Again. But when they were revamping it, he was like, I'm going to be there with Deborah Ann Woll. We worked great together with Karen Page. This is going to happen. Here's what's going to happen. He's obviously, like we've talked about with people who work with him, like he feels the Punisher, like so strongly about the Punisher and ownership over the character. I'm sure there was a large portion of that, him being very, not in a bad way, but like very forcefully, here's what the Punisher needs to do. This is what needs to happen. And then be like, okay, we have you for 3 days, 4 days, we're going to do this. And it's cool, so they leave it in there. Yeah. But maybe it leads to that disparity in the episode you're talking about, Justin.
Yeah, and that's fine. He is great. But it's just strange. It felt like a strange twist to the ending that the show went that way. But on the Punisher-Karen Page thing, like, their relationship is great. That's the relationship that I want. Like, they have such great chemistry. Karen's role, like, as, like, the protector of Daredevil and sort of the, you know, facilitator of the Punisher or connector to Punisher. I really like that. And I don't know if the show is going to pursue that, because I think that would take up a lot of space, especially given Daredevil's horrible relationship with Heather that he blows right in the opening scene of this.
Which was great. I was so happy about that. He like pushed her aside and was like, Vanessa, listen, we have to talk. Steph, go away. I was so happy about that choice, because that needed to happen sooner rather than later. So to get,
I was talking about when he woke up and said Karen, and I forget who it was like, oh, that's the drugs. And I was like, oh, Vanessa, that excuse.
No, it's not.
No.
Vanessa said, yeah, it's the drugs. And, but it was good, because he literally pushed her aside, because she chose Kingpin over him anyway. You know what I mean? So like, she's not listening to him at all. No, the whole time he was like, you got to get away from Kingpin. She's like, I'm going in on Kingpin.
Not to give Heather too much credit, I don't know her personally, but Matt's lying to her the entire time.
Constantly.
About
he's
almost
trying to look out for her. What are you talking about?
But from Heather's perspective, he's clearly holding secrets. It's causing a fracture in the relationship, and that's frustrating for her. She doesn't know the Kingpin.
You trust Matt. You know what I mean? So if someone you trust says to you, hey, stay away from this giant, massive psychopath, you'd like to think that someone might listen to you.
Yeah, but think about it from Heather's perspective. Like, her boyfriend shows up with weird injuries.
I'm trying to think about it from her perspective.
I don't think you are, because your boyfriend shows up with weird injuries. Anytime she says, that Daredevil's like, I think it's a bad idea. And he's like, yeah, okay. And like, he storms out and is like, hey, you know what you need to do? Stay away from your job, which is a psychologist for the Kingpin.
Aside, if somebody you care about and maybe has some care for you or mutual respect or whatever you want to say, says, hey, this person's dangerous, you shouldn't double down and every opportunity you get to walk away, instead be like, let's be more partners.
That's in the real world. That's not dramatically interesting for a TV show. The other thing is, we've very clearly seen that Heather is like a moth to the flame with this stuff. One of the only things about her character that we know over the course of 9 episodes, she's like, I'd love to find out more about vigilantes and write a book about it. That's like her major character point that they keep hitting over and over. And when Kingpin's like, hey, come over here, we have an anti-vigilante task force, you could check on mental health for the entire city. Why would she turn that down? It's completely... I understand morally from the perspective of a person who is doing the right thing and us watching the heroes doing their thing, but inside the world of the show and the way they presented her character, it completely tracks the place she ends up.
Yeah. For the book that she's trying to work on, if nothing else. Because I agree, it is strange that she's centered I Hate Vigilantes as her entire personality for the show. But it does, I think they fix that by saying, well, she's writing this book, so it's a work ambition thing that makes her go to Kingpin.
Yeah.
Okay. So another thing that I thought was good was every time the Punisher and Daredevil are on screen together, the back and forth is just so enjoyable. I was having so much fun with the banter. The fact that, like, you know, he gets out of there, Daredevil gets out of there in a nice kind of fun move there where he outsmarts Buck, and his face as he's leaving was hysterical. And then the whole, like, hey, what are you, the nightgown was just so funny.
You and love that line.
It's so
that's
good.
That's crazy.
It's so good.
And I was like, what? Why are you saying
so
this?
So funny.
He's like, it's wall-to-wall assholes in here. And what are you, nightgown man? I was like, slow down.
Guy. No way. They haven't seen each other in a while. I thought it was hysterical. And I also...
Hey, man, I've been taking this improv class, Joy of Improv, Pila Page teaching. Really good stuff. Nightgown man. Play the truth of the scene.
Oh my God! I thought they really were, and also the just the action. You know, we haven't gotten a ton of it in this season, but the stuff that we did kind of early on, it was a little sketchy. But man, I've been so happy with the action in this, and especially in this kind of stuff where you're thinking, oh, they're in trouble. There are all these goons coming in. And they really.
The apartment fight was really good. Like, whatever problems maybe I have texturally with Punisher killing cops, it's a cool fight. And seeing them fight back to back is very cool. I do want to talk about the cold north of it all, because we certainly speculated hard about that. I don't know if you guys subscribe to Chip Zdarsky's newsletter. For anybody listening who doesn't know, Chip Zdarsky.
What's nice is I don't have to subscribe because you talk about it so much. So I feel like I get it every week.
I love it. It's like I get them from my friends who we're not actually friends with. The Chip Zdarsky wrote Daredevil for a very long time. He co-created Cold North with Marco Cicchetto, the artist. And so he was posting very excited from like the Daredevil Born Again premiere, being like, I met the actor who played Cold North. Cool, Cold North is on screen. He had a very funny bit in this week's newsletter being like, oh man, can't wait to see what my baby boy Cold North is up to this week. 1 hour later, uh-oh. And he was very honest about it. He was like, from his perspective, once he's done writing the thing, he's done, and whatever happens, which I thought was a very healthy response to it. He was like, it's still there on the page. I still feel the way I feel about Cold North in terms of when I was writing Cold North. Would I have preferred that he had not been blown up by the Punisher? Yes. But at the same time, it is what it is. But I got to say, that was weird. I think even with expectations, the way that they were like, clearly they were hyper-focusing on Cold North to be like, and that's the guy who killed White Tiger. But they were playing it like there was going to be a turn there, and there was zero turn.
And I also was like, we don't need to have just a more identified asshole bad guy cops. Like, we have our lead guy, the hand fryer. Like, to have Cole North just be like another mini boss of that, I was surprised they went that way. Mm-hmm. It would have made sense to have a gradation there. Instead, it was just he is worse right now.
I did want to get back to the romantic thing for a second, because Pete, I'm curious to get your take on this. We get the adrenaline, I'm sure, line for both Frank and Karen, and also for Matt and Karen. Who are you shipping harder?
Great call. Frank and Karen is where, but also why we were kind of talking about that, all three of them together play really well on screen. It's an interesting love triangle that's happening there. And also, when Daredevil calls Shotgun, I mean, I was laughing. I was having a great time.
Yes, just I see that's like a fun time. That's a fun moment. But I was like, this man's life is ruined. He's with a person he thinks is wrong morally, and he's called Shotgun. I was like, what
they're
are
still
we doing here?
Kind of acquaintances in a weird way. So the fact that it like comes down to, even if you know your life gets on fire and all this stuff, it's still a fun moment of like three people going in a car who's got Shotgun. And I think that that's a real nice slice of life that we can all relate to.
But to me, I guess that moment took me out a little. Like, and I get why they do stuff like that. It's like the Marvel tone a bit, and like they are, you know, friends. They have a shorthand. But in this show about Daredevil, that struck me as like a Deadpool thing to say.
Oh,
and it's Daredevil saying it, and it just felt very not Daredevil to be the man who, in earlier episodes, like when he's fighting the Irish bank robbers, he's like so intense. He's fighting the cops in the apartment. He's screaming.
But
he's
why is he tense around Karen and Frank? I mean, these people know him very well.
Yeah, but does Frank know him very well?
They were on a rooftop one time together, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, but I mean, they saved each other's lives. There's an amount of indebtment to them that they have to get back. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you play fun games. Do you think they played like per diddle and punched each other in the shoulder while they were driving?
Maybe. You know, it's like I spy, you know, probably on those road trips. You know what I mean?
Yeah. One other question about the Punisher is, has he always been such a coffee freak? There's so much. I mean, one of his only things he's chasing in this is like, where's the coffee, guys?
Yeah. I need the caffeine. So. That feels like a very John Bernthal thing to be like, I need some actor business with my hands here. And they just kind of work it in. But I don't know.
But he just talks about it so much. It's just such a funny detail.
Yeah. Some
people
morning,
need coffee to be able to, you know, start their day, guys. Yeah. I don't know.
You should
what
go
the
to
problem
that 5-hour energy drink. That would help.
Or a friend of mine was telling me about the 9-hour energy drink. That's where you take a 5-hour energy drink and pour it into a 4 Loko. And then drink
oh
that.
My God.
Jesus.
You'd probably die.
I was going to say, your friend's dead. Is that?
It turns you into Muse instantly.
What was interesting, funny you bring up Muse, when they had that shot of Kingpin with the bloody, it kind of looked like a Muse outfit. So I thought it was a nice little homage to Muse there.
Yeah, and Heather, I still think about your call, Alex, that Heather's going to become Muse next season. The look on her face when she's meeting with Kingpin at the end of the episode was like, this person's on the edge of snapping. So, like, I feel like that could be where we're going still.
Speaking of people snapping, I did want to talk about the whole Sheila, I really should remember the name of the police commissioner thing. But I thought...
You don't need to remember it anymore.
Well, he's half ahead. I thought that was great in its awfulness. You know, we've been talking about like the Trump parallels here and the whole idea of somebody ensconced in that administration wanting to do the right thing but being too scared to speak up. I thought that arc was very well done and very transferable to the real world.
What one thing
too close to home, I thought. Yes. Like it was like the authoritarian thing with like cutting the power, declaring martial law, finding a weird loophole around the Red Hook thing. I was like, this is very, very real. And
well, particularly
you go.
Oh, I was just going to say this coming at the same time the Trump administration has said they're going to, take over Penn Station?
Yeah.
That they're going to take over the renovations there and everything. I was like, like this.
But in this show, it's shown as the most evil thing possible. And in the real world, it's also happening. So it's very unsettling.
Yeah.
Sorry, Pete.
One thing you kind of brought up in your recap is this idea that I feel like, you know, she was kind of like, Sheila was trying to signal the commissioner that like, hey, you know what I mean? Like that was such an interesting thing of like, is she going to tip off the commissioner? Is she going to team up with the Kingpin? And she got kind of used without her being able to do anything. You know what I mean?
Like she made the choice. She made the choice to flip on him.
No. I don't think she flipped on him at all. She got tapped. And Kingpin listened to the conversation, but she wasn't able to say anything.
She recorded him and gave it to the Kingpin to keep her place, I thought.
Yeah, she got scared. I think she legitimately, what I took away from it was she legitimately wanted to stand up in that conversation with the police commissioner. And like the show has been doing laudably, I think, all along, there are things that happen off screen. There are decisions that the characters are not saying out loud. And in this case, like Justin saying, Sheila got scared. She backed off. She recorded it and gave it over to the Kingpin because she's scared for her life.
I think Kingpin said, here, I'm going to tap you. You're going to record this conversation so I can hear what happened. And I think that's why she had that look the whole time of like, this isn't what I want to say. This is what I want to do, Commissioner. Like it was kind of a.
Either way, she capitulates to the Kingpin, whether she did it separately or for him directly. And I think what I like about the way they played it is I was always wondering, like, why is Kingpin keeping her there? Because she's just pushing against him and slowing him down, quote unquote. Not even using her, he knows he has control of her. Mm-hmm. That she claims autonomy throughout this entire season, but he knows that he has her the whole time and he gets her just like he wants her to do, what he needs her to do. Yeah. And that's what we get.
Yeah.
I want to jump to the end of the episode a little bit and talk about something that I do think is lacking here, and I understand why, but at the same time, it was pretty glaring to me, and that is more vigilantes. You know, this is something we talked about over the couple of episodes, and I do think, to say this once again, there is a good idea there in terms of Fisk coming up with a demonic entity, which is vigilantes, something demonized in the city. That isn't there much, and then amping up power. Because again, that is exactly what is happening in real life right now, particularly with trans people, among many, many other people as it expands wider and wider. So that all tracks. I don't think they really hit that on the show to the point that, particularly like we were joking about earlier, when they show up in Josie's and it's a bunch of guys, that Shuri, I guess, has been able to do some stuff. I had half convinced myself at that point, even though I don't think it would work, that the Defenders were going to be there. Like, at the very least, Cage and Jessica Jones.
I think we're going to get Luke Cage. I would agree with you. Next season, I bet we get Luke Cage. I felt that should really make you happy, Pete. I think we're like 50-50 well, Jessica guessing. Jones. Well, of course, we're all guessing, but they need more vigilantes. And I feel like, you know, I don't know what the contractually would be like, but like, it's right there. They need someone or something. They're not going to get Spider-Man. And it wouldn't really match.
No, they can't. They actually cannot get Spider-Man. I mean, I don't know the exacts of the contracts because I'm not a lawyer, but Sony owns the rights to use Spider-Man for TV live action. Animated, they can work things out. That's why we got your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. That's why Spider-Man has shown up like a little bit on What If. And they also had Spider-Man show up without speaking on X-Men 97. But live action, they're not going to do it. It's not going to
happen. So we could get an animated Spider-Man is what you're saying.
I would love to see
Roger Rabbit like style.
What is it? DJ Cool Cat, like an opposite track type thing, but with Daredevil and an animated Spider-Man.
Wow. Yeah, hopefully we'll get John Mulaney doing Spider-Ham in next season. He'd be like, cool. Daredevil, don't go into that factory and fight.
It's cool. I mean, there's the very fanboy reaction that I had is like, you get into Josie's and Luke Cage and Jessica Jones step out of the shadows and like, how can we help? That blows the roof off. But it also... Yes. I think part of the reason they don't do it is it distracts from the finale, because the finale then all becomes about them coming in. It's also for anybody who doesn't actually know that.
Like, wait a second. It distracts from the finale of him not having more happen at the end. They do the exact same thing, Alex. It's just it's a bit of a letdown. So I think they could have done something.
Okay, but all right, here, another thing that I'll say, like I'll take another tack though, is like they kept it with the characters that they had in the season thus far. And the Punisher.
Of course, the characters we love, like that one police person who's there. And Josie, someone who said, I know a Foggy likes
saying,
the good
I
stuff.
Think I'm lauding a TV show for keeping it within the season and keeping it to the text they have rather than like random characters that we've never seen before showing up. But at the same time, it would have been very cool. That's my point.
Hey, the idea that it's like Hawkeye, Johnny Storm. It's like, okay, that would be much. But I hear you. And I just think we won't get Iron Fist. Not a chance.
Maybe Colleen Wing. We could have Colleen Wing. She's the new Iron Fist, as we all remember at the end of Iron Fist season 2.
Indeed.
Did you guys, as New Yorkers, feel like an 8 o'clock curfew is just a slap in the face for people to do shows and stuff like
that?
It
would never work. They should have said 10 o'clock. Come on, Kingpin.
That was kind of crazy. What are they going to do? Push Broadway earlier?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like, well, come on. That's just
what
ridiculous.
Are those poor ushers? Who are those ushers going to hug? That's my question.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Think of the ushers. Maybe there's going to be some ushers on the army. The hugging army, Daredevil's hug army.
There's a scene where like Daredevil goes into Josie's, cuts all the Broadway theaters. The ushers turn around. They're like, I'm ready to help.
Yeah, we need an army. And the ushers all stand up. You know what I mean?
Because here's the thing. Karen would have told the ushers not to go in, and the ushers would have gone. And
do you think it was weird when Kingpin said, never forget, I love New York? It was a real weird moment for me.
Oh, that was great. That was a callback to an earlier episode. I think like his first speech in, I want to say episode 2 or 3.
I felt
3.
Like it was a callback for 9/11.
Maybe. I mean, I guess it's always a callback to 9/11.
Anytime you said never forget, I'm like, well,
Yeah. What good are we doing callback, right now? Bro? Is that what you're like?
The Punisher's been working some callbacks into his stand-up set.
I don't know if I'd use callback and 9/11 in the same sentence. That's all I'm saying. Okay.
That's fair.
The other thing about sort of around what we're talking about, the Punisher calling them clowns so many times over and over again.
I love
clowns. Because I agree with you. I wish he had more of a speech there instead of
I do.
Like,
I do
you
wish know,
you guys are clowns.
Because I was clowns. Like, we want those two people to be sitting down and talking so badly to be like, you're wrong. No, you're wrong. You know what I mean? Like, but calling them clowns was great because it really lets you know how he feels about him. There's no way to misinterpret that.
But I wanted either him to have a deeper philosophical talk or to be like, you're clowns, you got your juggling balls, you're flipping them in the air, you're putting on a little show, you got a squirty flower, you got big shoes, you're all getting into a tiny garden.
He should have elaborated about what clowns are.
He should have word for word done the Joe Pesci speech from Goodfellas. Like, yeah. Not reference it at all.
Believe me, that's what Bernthal wanted to do. And they were like, cut. You can't say that. That's a speech in another movie.
All right, but I've done Taxi Driver like 5 times so far. Yeah, and that's okay.
That's cool. Yeah. Is Nightgown Man part of that? You guys order some pies and throw them at each other. You guys are clowns.
You guys, you're talking about like it wasn't hysterical, and it was hysterical.
I have a question about the Kingpin's plan. So Red Hook, they say, is a free port, and it's been a free port since 1855. So there's basically no laws in Red Hook. Like,
that's right.
I can go into the IKEA right now, stick my hand at the meatballs, take as many as I want, and nobody can stop me.
That's true. You should do that.
You can do that in most places, Alex, once.
Once. Say you saw it on Disney Plus. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No. Disney Plus told me to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
It does seem lawless in Red Hook, the coffee prices they're charging down there. Am I right? $5? Okay, where are we? Where'd you get these beans out of a cat's asshole?
You're opening for the Punisher, or the Punisher is opening for you?
We're sort of dual headliners. But wow, the set's really coming together.
That's cool. That's nice the way you're sharing. Now, if you're in a cage.
One bad day tour.
If you're in the Kingpin cage, are you happy when they walk by? You're like, oh, it must be 5 o'clock. It's time for date night.
That was another part, by the way. I know you're sorry not to swerve jokes, but like that was another part where I was like, there's got to be more people in these cages, right? Like there's the Punisher, Tony Dalton, who says nothing, and then a bunch of
people. His presence is unbelievable, though. You put the swordsman on screen.
Give that man something to do. I am begging you.
He's amazing. Just having him on screen is great.
It's crazy. He is such a good actor.
He's awesome. He's hysterical.
Because who are the other people?
I'm surprised no one was booing him when he went by. Everybody was like, ooh, like they were rooting for them to get back together. They're like, oh, I think they're going to work out, guys. I was like, cage people, you should be booing them.
Right. Like, so I think you were just saying this, Justin. Who is caged up there? Because Punisher and Jack Duquesne, swordsman,
cops
are both
who
vigilantes.
Are like good cops.
Yeah, is it good cops? Is it billionaires? Yeah. Is Catherine Lanasa chained up in there?
I feel like maybe she was. Maybe? Or so like I don't know. But also I'm like, there's no reason why he shouldn't just have killed the Punisher. Why did they let the Punisher live besides TV reasons?
Well, it's probably because what cop is going to kill him? They love him so much. They're like, well, I can't do it. You know, I got his tattoo right here. I can't shoot him.
They could have easily. Yeah, I can't shoot my tattoo. It's the rules. Yeah. He inspired me.
What else from the episode? What else should we talk about here?
I just want to agree with you real quick, Alex, that the resist, rebel, rebuild, we are a city without fear was a nice line.
Yeah. Good last line.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good.
We all three agreed on that.
No, maybe I think Justin was being sarcastic.
Yes, maybe next season he can just run for office and beat Fist the old-fashioned way with a great debate. Because that's all. I don't need to have him fight. That's the other thing is, like, I see, again, writerly why Karen needed to come to Red Hook and be like, don't go in there, you'll die. But what was the other reason for bringing her for Daredevil?
She saved
the
whole
thing.
Hey, come
to this fight.
Dude, what are you talking about?
I'm going to get you killed.
Karen Page is the fucking godfather. She made all this shit happen. She made one phone call. Frank got off his ass and fucking showed up to save the day. Karen Page is pulling strings on this whole fucking thing.
She's the queenpin.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to fight some cops or anything like that, but I agree with Pete. It is a good decision to bring Karen Page anywhere because she gets shit done.
Yeah,
she's great. To the shores of Red Hook where she sits on a rock within gunshot range and you go have a fight. Cool. Very cool.
I thought it was great. She is fantastic every time she's on the screen.
Too.
She's fantastic.
I do like the way that Fisk and Vanessa are like living their best lives at the end of the episode.
I don't buy that at all. She is not in that.
Yes, she is.
She definitely is. Color palette they chose.
Not looking at her eyes.
At the beginning,
she's always being in it. Like, that is the point of that first scene with Dex at the beginning of the episode. I know I already called out the line, but like, everything that she has been doing all along has been by Wilson Fisk's design that they worked on together. Like, any of those fractions that happened over the course of the season, I think certainly because of the affair, there was a bit of a rift between them. But they've always been working together.
After the shooting, she's sitting there and she's doing this whole posture thing, and he has to be like, hey, I know. And she drops the act and goes, sits down next to him to be like, oh, fuck. You guys are saying that she's sitting down next to him being like, yes, this is great. We are in an amazing place together.
Yes.
Yes.
She's been conning him the whole fucking time.
She is not.
No. She's been working together for him.
Time will tell.
The color palette of the reds and the whites that they do with the two of them, and the blood and the painting and all that has been really nice, I thought.
He's her blood, it seems like. You know what I mean?
What?
She represents his blood. That's why she's wearing red all the time.
Interesting. Oh. Nice. Okay. That's what happens when my wife and I go out. I'm like, all right, my blood.
Well, I assume you don't stand in front of the wall punching things system. And making blood go everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like to consider my wife sort of my pancreas. Mm.
Pete, on your Tinder bio, you have must dresses by Lymph, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Looking for blood in all the wrong places. Feeling pain.
It's rough out there, dude.
Great. We get a good scene with Daniel Blake in this episode, too, right? Where he confronts... Oh, were you going to talk about that, Justin?
I was going to say, are we getting a Buck, Blake, and Sheila sitcom next season? Because those guys, three guys are like, doink, here we are, trying to figure things out.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know. Why don't we go into our vision board, because there is a lot to talk about with season two. Like we said, 8 episodes, going to premiere ostensibly in March, unless Disney, I guess, decides differently or something goes horribly wrong with the shooting, the production, like it did with season one. Mm. But assuming everything's fine, about a year from now, we're going to get season two. Some additions that we know are going to happen in the season. You had mentioned about politically Daredevil standing up, but actually Lily Taylor is joining the season as potentially, the rumor is, she's a political rival to Wilson Fisk, maybe challenging for mayor or something like that. Also, excuse me, we know Matthew Lillard is joining the cast in a mystery role. We don't know what he's playing. And there's a couple of other folks and things that I'm forgetting that I can look up in a second. But what do we want to see? What are we excited about seeing in season two? Oh, wait, I remember the other things. So these are mild spoilers. So if you don't want to know, turn away. But because they film, Pete's taking off his headphones, because they film here in New York, we do get to see a lot of the stuff that's happening when it happens on the street. Seems like Matt is going to be teaming up with Bullseye. He's also going to be getting his classic black costume with red DDs on it. And Bullseye
is
also
Affleck costume.
Yes,
right?
The Ben Affleck costume. No, that was still red, right?
Wasn't it black?
It was
at
like
one
a darker red. Like it was more of a maroon. And Bullseye is going to get a little bit more of a costume as well. Pete, you can put your headphones back on. What do we think? What do we want to see in season two?
Well, one thing I was going to say is, like, I hadn't heard that about Bullseye. Like, Bullseye is left at the end here, and I'm like, well, might as well team up with Matt since he's down in the Punisher. He has no real moral compass, seemingly. So he's ready to take on anyone who can fight in the army. He'll do it.
Oh, you think Bullseye's going to join Daredevil side? That would be interesting.
I mean, they're the enemy of my enemy. Like, they are, they're trying to kill, the Fists are trying to kill Bullseye. Bullseye's trying to get revenge. Like, so it's right there.
Well, and I think that would provide some nice redemption for Matt, who still blames himself for throwing Bullseye off the roof. So, yes.
I do think you're misunderstanding something about
Bullseye.
Teaming
up with him to kill
Bullseye,
other people
though.
Should cheer him up.
I think, though, Bullseye gets mad at Matt originally in the comic books because makes him miss. And he was trying to kill Wilson Fisk, and Daredevil made him miss, so he might be mad at Matt. So,
well, do you think there's any sort of precedent for Daredevil teaming up with a kind of, like, unrepented killer who's like, please don't kill those people, and then the other character kills those people anyway, and Matt is like, oh, come on, man.
You're really off the... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of come on, man, from Matt next season.
I want to see the same sense of focus that came from season one. That's my big thing. I really like this season. I thought it was very good, and the individual episodes were good, and I know we had our differences about the finale, but I thought they arced this out really nicely. I'm hoping it's not just finishing up this story, but they really thought about it as like, what is the story we're telling over these eight episodes and in these episodes individually? Because I do think the temptation could be after we, you know, they fixed season one to go back to the more MCU method of eight part movie. And I just hope they don't do that.
Yeah. I hope I do want them to continue this idea, like Matt building up his army and like for the big confrontation as like a big, like two or three episode finale type thing. Cause I feel like since it's obvious that it was always meant to be a two season arc, that it has to be a big end. So we'll get to that. But before we get there, I want to see some like more bodily episodes that will be standalone. Maybe getting like we could get a Foggy flashback episode with whatever he was doing with the case. Maybe that could be a cool procedural thing. And if Karen's going to be back in main cast, like Karen Punisher, do they have like a little like tragic rom-com happening as well? Ooh. I think that could be cool. Curious what's going to, the Heather character next season, it feels like Daredevil and her are not really, don't have much of a relationship at the end of this season. So where does that go? Finally. Does she become Muse? Is the, is a new Muse who, what's his name? The actor you just mentioned from Scream and Shaggy?
Matthew Lillard.
Yeah. What is he? Maybe he's a new Muse. Maybe Heather's a new Muse, as Alex suggested. Like, I think there's just a lot of options on the table, and I think as long as they gather them in the right way and spread it out like they did this season, I think that could be very cool. And I will say, I did like this season. This season was good. I was just surprised at the last episode.
Alex, did you want to look like you were going to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say someone that I don't think we really saw in this episode, or at least they didn't touch on his heart, is B.B. Urich.
Yeah. And, well, we got to see her kind of reporting on the streets that Urich was on fire.
But I think that tantalizing detail from episode 8 of her going after Kingpin for justice for Ben Urich, I almost want to see that be the way they beat him next season, is through that, and we do get that justice for Ben. That's very similar to season one and season three, where they sort of like got Kingpin on a technicality. But I think that's how you get him, is not by beating the shit out of him on the street, but by getting him on some sort of legal thing is the way to take him down, which also textually allows him to rise again to plague season three, season four, whatever.
Yeah. Though I will say, we can't have Kingpin be the villain.
Tried that with season two and it just did not work.
Well, but I think you just need someone that has the juice. Like, I just think if you defeat Kingpin after a full two season, highly anticipated confrontation, you can't bring him back in episode one of season three. Mm-hmm. We can follow his journey somewhere, but Matt needs to fight someone else.
Okay. So here's my, what I'm hoping for here. I do think that, you know, that I want to see another sit down with Kingpin because it was so good. Mm-hmm. I would love to kind of bookend the situation with that. But also, because this season started with breaking my heart, it would be great to see if the start of this next season, like someone maybe goes to shoot Karen and Daredevil grabs Steph and kind of puts her in the way and uses Steph? Her as like your shield, or what's
Heather,
her name?
Heather.
Heather, and just kind of like
just any person named Stephanie.
No, just throws that therapist in front of the bullet to save Karen, because have this kind of they started the season by being like, this old thing is dead, and now, you know. So I'm wondering what
so
the
you'd
reborn
like them to
for season
kill
two.
More women next season is what
oh
you're asking
my God,
for.
No,
yeah, Daredevil not only kills people, he puts them in front of bullets.
Obviously, it's a joke, but I just think
is
that.
Is it? I don't know.
Oh, my
you
God.
You want it. You wouldn't be mad about it. You wouldn't be mad about it.
But I'm looking forward to more of my favorite three people, which is Daredevil, Frank, and Karen. So I'm hoping to get a lot more than that. And
The Foggy Erasure.
Oh, no. Jesus, I haven't finished. yeah, you guys have brought up foggy flashbacks, and that would be really nice. I was happy with how much Daredevil talked about Foggy.
Can I throw out an idea? If they do have a flashback episode, they should title it Foggy Memories.
Ah, that's nice.
Really?
Today's foggy memory. We're going to go back to when Foggy ordered an expensive whiskey, and that's how
he'll remember what he was drinking. He never drinks this. He would never buy that kind of drink.
Do you think Matt can hear like top shelf alcohol? Mm-hmm. Like he's like, yes, get that shit off.
You can hear where it comes, which shelf it comes from.
You can hear the difference between tequila and mezcal, which very hard to do.
Yeah, oh, he has a smoke sense.
But I did think this was a fun season, even though my heart was absolutely ripped out of my chest, numshy by Styles. I did have a great time, and I'm hoping for more. And I hope it got a ton of views, and we'll continue.
We'll see about that. It hasn't really ranked on Nielsen's streaming top 10 at all for the first 3 or 4 weeks or so.
So yeah, but this last app, though, you know what I mean?
We'll see. Total, not to get too wonky about it, but a lot of it definitely depends on the amount of episodes you have, because they judge streaming by number of minutes versus anything else that makes sense.
Well, I've watched that slow motion roll for hours.
It could bump up as they get more hours of television behind them, potentially. I don't think it did what they needed it to do. I think the first episode or first two episodes came out lower than Agatha All Along, if I remember, which was already pretty low. But they're filming season two, so who cares? We're going to watch it. I think the big question is, like, once season two hits, given the generally positive notices about the first season, will it build from there? Will it get bigger in the second season? That's the thing that'll potentially lead to the third season, because they already ordered 18 episodes of it, and now they're going to produce 17 of them. So that's already a done deal. The question is more about, like, what happens in 2027, and honestly, I don't think anybody knows.
Truth.
Real quick before we wrap up here, not to put you guys on the spot, but just without ranking everything, generally, where would you put it on the MCU TV canon?
Jesus Christ.
Like, where would it be? Like,
great
would it be top five,
out of left heel, fucking
Pete, Jesus, we do this every Christ. Single last episode, so you really should be prepared.
I think pretty high up there. Like, it was the writing on this show was just much, much better than so much of what the MCU has done in TV. Like, I think WandaVision had some good writing, and they got to be weirder than we thought, but ended in a pretty flat MCU style. This got to carry its torch throughout the season. And though it did, like I've been saying, pivot to just a slightly cynical watch next season move, I think the writing across the board was really top notch. I'd put this in maybe top three.
Yeah,
like I really like Agatha All Along, WandaVision. I don't know what else is even on that list.
Yeah,
Echo. I would,
what did you say? Arrow?
Echo?
Oh, Echo. No, I would definitely put a top five. I also haven't really thought about, like, specifically where I place it, but, like, first season of Loki is really good. Second season of Loki, not so much. Hawkeye is a ton of fun for sure. But I agree with you. When I was thinking about it, like, WandaVision is all this is one that I go to for that is number one, but it did kind of fizzle out by the end, which I think this just had more of a command across the board as a season of television, like you're saying. So I don't know. I could definitely be argued here, but I'd kind of like tentatively put it at number one, frankly.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Frank Castle.
Yeah.
I definitely would put it up there. I also enjoyed, Echo and Luke Cage and, Moon Knight. She-Hulk was great. So
you like all of them?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of this stuff. I enjoy watching them. So
I'm a big
fan of this stuff. It's a very funny thing for you to say to us right now.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I've been wanting to recommend some of this stuff.
Jessica Jones.
You guys should check out this Marvel TV and movie stuff.
I'm a big fan of this stuff.
This is great.
Really, you are.
Really?
Huh. What a side of Pete I've never explored. Wow. His fandom of comics. That's interesting.
All right. I'd love to find out more about that at some point. But I don't know.
Send us an email.
Time.
Could you write up a quick email about what your interests are?
Yeah.
And what some of this stuff is?
Some places to start with this stuff. That would be great. Yeah.
A link, please.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is it for the season of Daredevil Born Again. We will be back here on the podcast with Thunderbolts pretty soon is coming up. That's the next thing coming up. Fantastic Four later on in the summer. We also got Ironheart, Wonder Man, Marvel Zombies, Eyes of Wakanda is the one that I keep forgetting. So plenty more Marvel coming your way over the course of the year. In the meantime, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out.
Sure do.
We would love to chat with you about Marvel, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, stay marvelous.
And while you're out there, stay clowns, you bunch of honk your noses, you clowns. You got a honky nose, you Pagliacci's. You are the clown. You're sad. You're the clown, Pagliacci. I'm the clown. I'm the puncher. I'm the clown. We're all clowns.
Shotgun.